3 Near FM.
Thomas Jefferson said, "We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate." Welcome to International Politics Near 90.3 FM's look at the world of international politics and national politics of international significance. I'm Peter Kearney. I'm with you fortnightly, Tuesday afternoon, 3:30 to 4:30 PM. You're very welcome. And on this day, the 4th of June, some significant political happenings. In 1913, Emily Davison, a suffragette, runs out in front of King George V's horse and mare at the Epsom Derby. In 1939, the Holocaust, the MS St. Louis, a ship carrying 963 Jewish refugees is denied permission to land in Florida in the United States after already being turned away from Cuba. Forced to return to Europe, more than 200 of its passengers later die in Nazi concentration camps. And in 1970 on this day, Tonga gains independence from the United Kingdom. And I was looking for significant political births on this day and I couldn't find any. So if you know of any, by all means, please do let me know. And you can, of course, participate by texting us on 087-6944-500, that's 087-6944-500. You can call us directly in studio or directly into the station at 867-1190. That's a Dublin number, 867-1190. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so on Facebook, Twitter, any of those things, meet up any of those groups. Type in either Peter's Politics or International Politics Dublin and you'll find me right there. So as they say, a great show lined up for you this fortnight. And indeed we have. We're looking at, or we're going to suppose, to five different countries this week. And they are, of course, so the first up is Ireland. We're going to be speaking to Jerry McGlinchey, or I've already spoken to Jerry McGlinchey, who's husband of Marion Price McGlinchey, who was released on the 30th of May. Speaking to him about that, how he feels about it, and indeed, I suppose, what went behind her most recent imprisonment, and talking about that. We're then going to Pakistan with the drone strikes. We're going to speak to Kaswar Klasra, who is an investigative journalist from Pakistan. I've spoken to him before, and he's speaking about the most recent drone strike, in which the number two of the Taliban in the northwest region of Pakistan was killed by a drone strike, a US drone strike. As well as that, some Pakistani civilians were also killed. So a pre-record with Mr. Kaswar Klasra, who is a Pakistani investigative journalist. Then we're going to Armenia to talk about military brutality. Zovinar Nazarian is talking to us about that. Now, Zovinar Nazarian has got a group called Army in Reality Civic Initiative, which highlights and which deals with human rights in the military. There's a number of human rights abuses in the military that Zovinar is highlighting. So a pre-record with Zovinar later on in the show. Sometime after that, we're off to Mexico. We're talking about press freedom in Mexico, and it's an interview, a translated interview that I did with Veronica Basurto Gamero from Mexico. She spoke in Spanish. Now, the interview you will hear is the translated version with Adán Vera, who is a Mexican citizen. He translated it for me at the interview, and you will just hear Adán's voice in it. So, but it's all directly from Veronica. And then the final part of the show, we're going to be talking about Slovak Culture Week, which is starting this Friday. It's been launched this Friday, and I'm going to be speaking to Maros Karabinos about that. And we'll find out a little bit more about that as the show goes on. Okay, so I thought, given that it is such a sunny day, and I think it was sunny the last time I was on as well, it's you can always remember these days as to when it's sunny. It's very sunny outside. It's quite warm here in the studio, but it's lovely. It's lovely to have that. And I might kick off with a piece of music here. And let's see, what will I have? Some Daft Punk there, which I can't really vouch for. I've never really played it before. And let's just go for this one here. I've no idea what it is, but let's just go for it anyway and see what happens.
This is the end. Station. Put out.
I'm sure that's quite a fine track, but that's what you get for taking a risk. It's not typically the type of thing, the music that I would play. So apologies if people didn't like that, but it's not really my kind of music. But that's what you get for taking a chance on music. So it's really something you should have properly lined up as your music selection. But anyway, it's a sunny day, so I'm sure some people got a lot of pleasure out of it. Okay, so on to the first piece, as that is to Ireland. And it's an interview that I did with Jerry McGlinchey, who is the husband of Marion Price McGlinchey, who was released on the 30th of May from prison in the north of Ireland in May 2011. It is said that the former Northern Ireland Secretary, Owen Paterson, revoked her licence under which she was released in 1980 because of her alleged involvement with dissident Republican activity in the north of Ireland, and she was sent back to prison. Now, her family, of course, and met plenty of others, dispute this, because that there was any such licence, because in 1980 she was released under a kind of a royal pardon. Now, for some reason known only to the authorities, that royal pardon seems to have disappeared, and when she was in prison in May 2011, would have been automatic for someone to say actually she wasn't released, or her licence wasn't revoked, she was released by royal pardon in 1980, and of course no trace of that royal pardon could be found. Well, last week on the 30th of May, Marion Price was released, much welcomed by her family and beyond, also people in Sinn Féin, leading academics in Northern Ireland and the United States, Professor Phil Scratton from Massachusetts, Dr. Linda Moore from the University of Ulster, SDLP, the AOH Father Sean McManus from the Irish National Caucus in Washington DC, TDs Claire Daly and other independent TDs spoke about it as well as Fianna Fáil senators, Jerry Conlin, Weed Speaker Rashida Mograbi from Palestine, and even Trevor Lunn of the Alliance Party in Northern Ireland questioned, I'm not saying he got behind it to support it, but he questioned the keeping of her in prison as well. So that's the volume and the level of support was behind it. So eventually she was released. So I caught up with Jerry during the week by telephone, so let's hope the quality is sufficient on this, but I caught up with Jerry by telephone, and this is what Jerry had to say about it all.
There's the annoyance, for want of a better word, that she should never have been in jail in the first place, because, as you know, a royal pardon was destroyed.
Yes.
If that royal pardon had been available, you know, there was no license to be revoked.
Yeah.
That is one of the things that annoys us.
Yes. Now, just before we get on to the royal pardon, what state is Marion's health in at the moment?
She's very ill. Her immune system's very, very low. She's very badly affected with arthritis, and because they've been trying to bring up her immune system, she hasn't been able to get her treatment for the arthritis. So it's taken a great hold on her, you know. Right.
And is she, what care is she in? Is she in hospital at the moment, or is she at home?
She is at home with daily home care package.
Right.
You know, so the doctors hope that the environment will give her that added chance to improve quicker.
Okay. Now, just as you mentioned, and as you know, it's pretty much 2 years, May 2011, since Marion was sent to prison, and there's certain conditions around as to how she ended up in prison, prison without trial. Now, Marion was released, if my memory serves me correct, back in 1980, and it was as a result of some kind of a royal pardon. Now, that royal pardon went missing, or can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, what actually happened when she was arrested in May, she was taken to court, and the judge immediately granted her bail on the charges, only we were then told that her licence had been revoked by the then Secretary of State, Owen Paterson. So the solicitor immediately challenged that and said there's no licence to be revoked. Marion was released on what was called a royal prerogative of mercy, better known as a royal pardon.
Yeah.
And of course, the establishment then, in order to produce the pardon, came up with the first of all, that the scenario couldn't be found, and then secondly, that it's been destroyed, shredded, and that no copies existed.
Yeah.
And just say, fewer people believe in the man on the moon than they believe that story.
Yeah, yeah,
Yes, incredible, incredible how people like that could lose something. And even on the BBC website, they were still going with the notion that she was put in prison as a result of her a licence being revoked. Yeah.
The same for we pardon and the history of the police state, the whole message.
Yes.
So that, I think, speaks for itself.
Yeah.
As I say, it stinks of MI5, you know.
As I said, we know Marion was in prison and she was in pretty poor condition in prison. Discussed in the Dáil, and it was even mentioned at one stage by a member of the Alliance Party in the Northern Ireland Assembly, which is how critical the condition, Marion's condition became. Now, I appreciate it's not easy for you to go through this, Gerry, but can you tell us a little bit about the conditions that Marion had to endure in prison?
Well, she was in prison for just over 2 years. Actually, in June last year, she was moved to hospital, as you're aware, but she was still kept under prison conditions. No access to fresh air. The all intents and purposes wasn't allowed outside. Was kept segregated from all the other prisoners and patients when she went to hospital. When she moved from McGarvey to Hague Bank, the conditions in Hague Bank were absolutely deplorable. Mm-hmm. She was in a blocked off way at the end of a corridor with no windows, no natural light there, the all intents and purposes, no fresh air, you know. So, as I say, that's where our health accelerated the deterioration of our health.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she had to be moved to hospital then.
Yeah.
Well, I might add, she at September, she had two bouts of pneumonia. The doctors told her the error of which could have killed her. The often problem that we have in the hoping can eventually be solved, though sure it's a long journey, is her immune system has been decimated, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, as they said that the pardon went missing, now you think that this obviously had something to do with MI5, that something like this went missing. What eventually then was their reason for releasing Marion? Is it as a result of her condition?
We don't know. The commission decisions aren't made public. The reasons for the decisions aren't public.
Right, so they have, there's no official...
A weapon, in a law, any parent would love to have that as a weapon that they can arrest people, not produce any evidence. As I say, that's the law. He ain't held in secret. The defendant's not allowed to know the evidence against her. It's called CMP, Closed Material Procedures. And as I say, where do you go, you know, to answer that? You know, as I say, the Good Friday we were justice would be done and seen to be done, you know. So, what position are we in there then, you know? As I say, Lord Newburger, I've said on previous occasions, who's president of the Supreme Court in England, has said that all judgments should be open and available to be seen.
Now, on that basis then, is it possible then at any stage that they could do the same again?
Yeah, that's the tragedy about it. The royal pardon is missing, the officials out on license again here.
Right.
So the same scenario applies completely.
Is it a case where you believe that people in the north of Ireland or anywhere else who associate themselves with Republicans who haven't, for want of a better description, bought into the Good Friday Agreement, do you feel that there is a certain victimisation of people who associate with groups like that, or are they being targeted in some ways by the police?
Well,
and that was Gerry McGlinchey there in an interview about the release of Marion Price, and indeed, as he mentioned, the farcical situation where the pardon she was given in 1980 disappeared, and the potential or the allegations that MI5 could have some involvement in it all, and indeed with policing in Northern Ireland. So quite frightening stuff. Okay, so on to our next piece. It's about the US drone strikes. The US drone strike killed the number two Pakistani Taliban in North Waziristan on Wednesday last, when the 29th of May. Three security officials officials in what would be a major blow against militancy. This is according to Reuters. Now, on the show, we spoke to Mr. Kaspar Klasra, who is a Pakistani investigative journalist. So I caught up with him to find out what he thought about this, about the recent attack, what effect it had on the Taliban, what effect it might have on the United States and their withdrawal from Afghanistan, and indeed what it does for Pakistani sentiments towards Americans.
This is true that a U.S. Drone attack struck here in Pakistan's Waziristan during the last couple of days, and it targeted Commander Wali-ur-Rahman, who was one of the most efficient and second in command of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Taliban, TTP, Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan's militant group, and he was killed reportedly. A day after the drone struck here in Pakistan, Taliban themselves confirmed the news that one of their die-hard and efficient commander has been killed. Yes. This is true.
So it's been confirmed by a reliable source?
Yeah, definitely. It was confirmed not only by the sources, but from the groups he was belonging to.
And now, this was the first strike by the US since the recent elections in Pakistan. Does this mean, or from your analysis or from what people are saying in Pakistan, does this mean that the Americans waited for the elections to be over before carrying out this particular strike?
Peter, let me give you some background. I think you are well aware about the deal, the possible deal between the Pakistani government and the Taliban. They were striking a deal, a peace deal, within next couple of months. And Wali-ur-Rahman, the commander who was killed a couple of days back during the U.S. drone attack, he was the main commander. You can say he was pro-talks, pro-peace deal talks commander. And with the assassination of this Taliban's commander, I think the Pakistani government is in a fix now, because the Taliban's, the TTP, has said yesterday that they are not going to strike a peace deal with the new Pakistani government. I think with the elimination of this such an important leader of Taliban's militant leader, I think Pakistani government will have to face another wave of terrorist attack inside Pakistan, and also the Taliban's commander and the TTP, they will strike in Afghanistan as well. Definitely the Americans, the NATO forces, they will be the prime target of these militants. And I think it was shocking news, not only for the Pakistani side, but also for some of the groups there in Afghanistan as well. Because you are well aware that the NATO forces and the US forces are planning to withdraw from Afghanistan in 2014. Mm-hmm. And the possible route for the withdrawal was Torkham border, from Afghanistan to Pakistan's tribal areas, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, and from passing to these areas, they were planning to withdraw from this region. And TTP has stronghold in Pakistan's lawless tribal areas, from where these troops were supposed to going back to their countries, passing through Pakistan. So, as your question is concerned, I think with the elimination of this Taliban's commander, Pakistani government means today Pakistan's parliamentarian, Pakistan's lower house of parliaments take oath today. Nawaz Sharif is going to be the next prime minister of Pakistan, and he is expected to take oath on 5 of this month, 5 June. Mm-hmm. So they were planning. They all were planning to strike a deal between the Pakistani government and the Taliban's commanders. But with the elimination of this die-hard commander, the Taliban had got back from their offer. Mm. So it would be not good for Pakistan, and also for the U.S. led NATO forces in Afghanistan as well. Have you ever heard about Imran Khan?
Yes,
his
government,
his political party, the Pakistan Tehreek itself, or you can say the Movement for Justice, has taken charge of provincial government in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province of Pakistan, that is bordering Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And he has been very much critical of U.S. drone strikes here in Pakistan.
Yes.
Following the first ever strike in Pakistan after the election, a furious Imran Khan demanded the next Prime Minister of Pakistan, Mian Nawaz Sharif, to give a statement to put end to U.S. drone strikes here in Pakistan.
Mm.
And also, Mr. Nawaz Sharif, the expected Prime Minister of Pakistan, he has been very much critical of U.S. drone strikes here as well.
Mm.
So I believe with the elimination of TTP commander, and also with the continual of drone strikes here in Pakistan,
yeah,
and the relationship between Pakistan and the United States can go and back burner.
Yeah. Now, the people who would be opposed to U.S. drone strikes, are they opposed to them because they support the Taliban, or are they opposed to them because the drone strikes are actually killing so many Pakistani civilians?
It's really a good question, and the answer to this question is that Pakistanis never ever supported Taliban.
Mm.
They are against the U.S. drone strikes just because this is violation of Pakistan's international airspace,
yes.
First point. And the second point is because these Taliban commanders, the militant groups, are hiding in Pakistan's lawless regions where the government of Pakistan has no reach at all. So in return, in order to put pressure on Pakistani government, the Taliban, the militant groups strike here in Pakistan in the form of suicide attacks, in the form of planted bomb attack, that directly attack the Pakistani people. So we need to understand the Pakistanis are not against the U.S. drone strike just because they promote or they support the Pakistani Taliban. This is not so.
Yeah.
They just oppose the drone strikes because of violation of Pakistani airspace. And the second part of your question is that the Pakistani mosques are the direct target of the militants, and that is why they are under the impression in case if the U.S. drone strikes are stopped here in this region, Taliban will stop attacking the innocent people as well.
Right.
So this is what the Pakistanis sees U.S. policies here,
yeah,
in the region, particularly in Pakistan.
Okay, now this, the man who was killed, Mr. Wali or Rehman, are you saying that he was against a peace deal or he was supporting a peace deal?
The militant commander, I'm talking about Wali Ur Rehman Khan, who was the second in command of Tehreek Taliban Pakistan, a militant group with strong base in Pakistan's lawless region. He was pro-peace deal.
Okay.
He was pro-peace deal, and he was striking a deal with the new Pakistani government.
So where is the logic in the Americans killing this man?
They have tried several times to compel the militants, either they are Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan or either they are the leaders of Al-Qaeda. So I think after they barely failed to convince the Taliban to strike the peace deal between the West and American as well. So, because they are hiding here in Pakistani lawless region, so and there is no alternative. So I think the United States believe that the U.S. drone attacks are the only weapons to silence them.
Right. So the Americans then, they don't care if this man wanted peace or not. As far as they're concerned, he's a leader of the Taliban, so it's an open target.
Yes, definitely. Mm. They are the open target. And one thing I must clear it to you that the Pakistani intelligence agencies, Pakistani government, they are to some extent collaborating with the Americans as well, because the area where these Taliban are the commanders are hiding out in Pakistani tribal areas, there. I think the Pakistani government and the Pakistan's military have less control.
Now, the Pakistani government have condemned this attack. Is that condemnation not genuine?
I don't think it could be a genuine. So when we talk about the previous government, they never challenged, they never asked the United States and NATO-led forces to stop the drone strikes.
And do we know in this strike, were any civilians killed in this recent strike?
Yeah, there has been reports that a dozen of civilians, including the children, the women, they were killed. And I must tell you, reportedly, whenever drone strikes here inside Pakistan, 90% of the victims of drone strikes here in Pakistan, they all are civilians. Mm-hmm. The drone strikes have to some extent eliminated some of the high profile target inside Pakistan, but majority, I think 90-95% of the drone strikes, they targeted the civilians.
My final question for you, has this increased anti-American sentiment in Pakistan, this recent strike?
Definitely. These drone strikes has fueled anti-American sentiments inside Pakistan, anti-American sentiment across Pakistan. And the first and major phenomena of this drone strike was that the provincial government of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, a province of Pakistan, they issued a statement yesterday that they could cut NATO supply. As a result of these drone strikes, and this could be an alarming situation for the US-led forces, US-led NATO forces in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
As a result of the killing of this drone, this commander, Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan have issued a statement day before yesterday that they will avenge the murder of their commander, and definitely it is a dangerous statement, and I think it could ignite a wave of terrorism across Pakistan.
Community Radio for Northeast Dublin, 90.3 Near FM.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming. Who? JB. And he's ready to suck it to you one time.
Scat Patrol in your neighbourhood. Monday night from 8. This is not the 5 o'clock news. You're listening to Scar Patrol.
The time might have changed from Wednesday to Thursday, but this is still Andy Flannery and Backtracking on Near FM. Your weekly hit of everything from all angles and genres. Regular features on artists, bands and festivals, because it's more than just the beats. Regular guests to check and bring us sonic gems from the past and present. So join me, Andy Flannery, on Backtracking 6 to 7 Thursday evenings on Near FM.
For 25 years, Beaumont Hospital has been caring for the medical needs of people living on Dublin's north side. Each year, 40,000 patients visit this premier medical facility, with some travelling from distant parts of Ireland to access its speciality medical services. The hospital is now our community's largest single employer, with a workforce of over 3,500. The staff and its patients are its beating heart, and Beaumont Hospital Foundation works to improve the level of patient care which the hospital provides. Listen out for the Foundation's monthly segment on Lifeline, focusing on some of the people who have been successfully treated in Beaumont, along with the thoughts and observations of their loved ones. Tune in to hear more or log on to www.bhf.ie.
Online at near.ie and on air across northeast Dublin. 90.3, this is Near FM.
And this is Peter Kearney on International Politics. So before the break, we're talking about Ireland and Pakistan. Now it's on to Armenia. And you might remember a couple of weeks ago, we featured the presidential elections in Armenia back in February. And one of the candidates, Andreas Kokassian, was on hunger strike. He went on hunger strike for about 28, 30 days at that time in protest against what he said was the corrupt regime of President Sargsyan, who eventually won those elections and is still in power. Now, it would appear that the allegations about corruption go beyond or go into every part of Armenian society. and it also extends into the army as well, and that seems to go into a number of different areas. Well, on hearing about this and through some of my contacts, I caught up with Zovinar Nazarian, and she works with a group called Army and Reality Civic Initiative, and they highlight the human rights abuses in the military. So I caught up with Zovinar Nazarian during the week, and this is what she had to say about the human rights abuses in the army in Armenia.
Target human rights in the military. This is the major issue that we try to address. We try to communicate between the media, the professional NGOs, and the victims, families of victims. But also, we recognize that all this situation is coming from the very corrupted situation in the army. When the high officials in the army are corrupted, and they actually perpetuate this violence in the army, this impunity in the army, because the political leaders need the officers' loyalty in the elections, when they use the army to elect the ruling party. This happens all the time. The military units, actually the servicemen, are ordered to vote for the ruling party, and the head of the ruling party is the president, and by constitution he is the head of the army. And also the army has been used in the clashes on March 1 in 2008, when the government forces attacked the peaceful protesters and left 10 people dead. 8 demonstrators and 2 servicemen were killed in those clashes. Mm-hmm. And the army was involved in dispersing the peaceful demonstrations. Mm-hmm. Later they accepted a law which allows the army to interfere, to take part in times of state of emergency. I must say that recently an incident happened when a soldier was killed in the army, and his family and fellow people from the village decided to bring the coffin to the capital, Yerevan, to put it in front of the government and to demand response from the government. On their way to Yerevan, lots of military police was trying to stop them, but they were fighting and coming forward and forward. So the Minister of Defense had to go and to meet them on the highway on their way to Yerevan.
So the government in Armenia needs the military to support its regime.
That's true.
And as a result of that, the military are allowed to do as they want. So how does that lead to, or how did that lead to the killing of certain soldiers? Is it that some soldiers are unhappy with what the military are doing?
The problem is that in the military, there are some prison rules that work in the military.
Right.
The military service is mandatory for 18 years boys not well educated. They believe in that masculine discourse that they need to pursue their manhood,
right,
in the military. And they start to argue the way the prison people do. So prison rules work there. They would not shake gay people's hands.
Okay, right.
Gay people are mostly excluded from the army because that might be dangerous for them.
Right,
physically,
okay.
Physically dangerous.
So it's a very macho, masculine culture,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that's the problem.
So it's a combination of the culture that exists within the military plus the need of the government to keep the military on side.
Exactly.
That allows these things to continue. So the killings within the military, they're not necessarily they're not ordered by the government, but they're not condemned either because the government needs them kept on side. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. This is what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Right.
So is there a particular reason behind the killings? And I appreciate that it's very sensitive. I appreciate it's a very sensitive issue for you personally, so I hope you don't mind my asking. But is there a particular reason behind why some people have been killed within the military? Or is this just, I don't mean just, but is this a case of bullying taken to a very extreme end?
It is bullying, it is violence, it is brutality, which is encouraged by the officers, or at least which is ignored by the officers.
Right.
And yes, people get killed or people commit suicide in non-combat situations because of their fellow servicemen. Mm. Of course, we are in no war, no peace situation with Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
And snipers also shot our soldiers. This happens on the border a lot. But we are trying to at least prevent the non-combat deaths.
Right.
In the military.
So there's still combatant. There's still some skirmishes with Azerbaijan on the border.
Yes, and sometimes they blame the Azerbaijanis,
right.
And they have right to do. But yeah. And sometimes it appears that it was a fellow serviceman rather than an Azerbaijani sniper.
So it's pretty much everything is the blame, apart from the culture within the military, apart from the bullying that's continuing, and apart from the fact that the government need to keep the army on side. Nobody's talking about these things. They're all saying it's either the Azerbaijanis or it's suicide or it's anything but the truth. Okay.
Actually, the Minister of Defense, recently the Minister of Defense said that he stopped and asked everybody in the military to stop saying that the army is the reflection of the society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and thank you very much to Zovin Nazarian for that interview. And as I said, the group that she's involved in, you can find out more information about them on Facebook or Google. Just put it in there. It's called Army in Reality Civic Initiative. Army in Reality Civic Initiative, and they look at human rights abuses in the military in Armenia. Now, I abandoned my investigative work. I will never go back to investigative reporting because of the lack of protection by the Mexican state, which should guarantee my family's safety and my freedom of expression. Unfortunately, many journalists live with fear as they work. So says Veronica Basurto Gamero, a Mexican journalist who has left Mexico. Reporters Without Borders released a video interview with Veronica Basurto Gamero, which you can find on YouTube quite easily. Just put in Veronica Basurto Gamero, you'll find it right there, or indeed Reporters Without Borders. A young independent journalist who used to be based in Mexico City explains why she had to flee abroad at the start of March this year. Now, I caught up with her via Skype, and as she doesn't speak English, the interview that I did was translated, and it was translated by Adan Vera. So you'll hear my voice and Adan's, and it's a translation of the interview I did with Veronica Basurto Gamero about her reasons for leaving Mexico, as to why she felt she had to leave the Mexican state, and what exactly it was that she was working on when she left Mexico. And this is the interview.
And did Florence Casse, did she actually do anything wrong? I mean, why her? They could have chosen anybody. Why Florence? Did she break the law in any way?
Okay, there are two situations, two theories about this. The first one is that this was a revenge against Florence's brother, whose daughter a company, a cosmetic company in Mexico. She was living 10 years in Mexico, married to a Mexican woman. And in this time, he started this company with an Israeli partner. This Israeli partner was in France with the public security secretary, the head of this organism called Genaro García Luna.
And this is a government organization?
Government police organization, social security. The head of this government institution was in France with this Israeli partner of Florence's brother. So, in one point, Florence's brother, I didn't get the name, wanted to dissolve this company, wanted to go back to France for some reason. And this The first theory is that this Israeli is taking revenge. So this is a whole setup because he has connections with this police institution. So this is interpreted as a revenge, a setup
For breaking the partnership.
For breaking
with
the
this,
partnership.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
for the company.
Do we know who this Israeli partner is?
Now, the interview that you're hearing at the moment, we'll go back to it in a second. Just to explain, the person that's been discussed, Florence Cassie, it was when Veronica investigated what happened to Florence Cassie. Florence Cassie is a French citizen who was arrested in Mexico. It was when Veronica began to investigate this and the events that came from it that the problems really begun for Veronica, ultimately leading, resulting in her having to leave Mexico.
Yeah, this person's name, and he's been mentioned in other investigations about this case. Proceso magazine, which is a political magazine in Mexico, journal. Also, a journalist called Carmen Aristegui has been following this investigation as well, and this person still keep coming. Also in books.
Uh-huh.
So this is the person who has a partnership with.
Okay, so the Israeli citizen that Florence's brother was in partnership with, the partnership broke up, and possibly, we don't know, possibly it could be a kind of a revenge attack for him breaking up that partnership. Okay,
yeah, so that's the first theory.
That's the first theory, yeah.
And we have a second theory. This theory is based on Sebastián Cassés, which is Florence's brother. He wanted to break the partnership because Eduardo Mangolis tried to
He tried to implicate him in illegal business.
Illicit business,
yeah.
So he refused that, and that's why he got upset and tried to connect it to some crimes.
Okay.
Second theory is from part of the Mexican government. It's all about her history, because when she was found in a house with some supposedly kidnapped persons, which was really hard to prove, they made some interviews to this person, to this supposedly kidnapped persons, and in the first interview, none of them recognized her as a kidnapper.
Right.
But until the second, one of them did recognize her, which is very strange, very weird situation, because the kidnapped person usually recognizes the kidnapper immediately,
but they didn't recognize her until the second time. That's raised questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So then it was when Veronica started investigating this, that's when the trouble began for Veronica. Is that right?
Yeah. All began when she visited Florence in the jail. These calls to her phones and everything. But then after, she made a documental about the same topic, which is improper process.
Mm-hmm. Improper procedures. Improper investigation procedures, yeah.
And then the real problems began.
The intimidation against Veronica, how high does it go? Is it just people at a local level from the prison? Is it local government? Or does she think that, maybe not necessarily against her, but does this type of thing go all the way to the top? Does it go all the way to the government, the intimidation against her? Or is it just officials at a local level?
Okay. She said that she couldn't actually tell who were these intimidations related, but the decision of going out of the country was not only hers, but of specialists and people that really knew about these situations.
Mm.
And she knew that she had to leave, like, now, immediately.
Really?
Urgently, yeah. It's hard to tell really who the intimidations came from, but the decision that she took on the March the 1st was a decision without going back.
So I mean, to make a big decision like that, to leave your country and to know that you probably can't come back, or at least you can't come back for a long time, it must be some very big people who are involved in this, if she felt the need to completely leave her country.
She can tell that very, very high level federal government people, part of the former president team, Felipe Calderón, are involved in these intimidations. Some very...
And I saw on the video that she got some support in Mexico, but clearly that wasn't enough. Is that correct?
Are you talking about the protection mechanism?
Yes.
Talk about that recently, in 2000, they created this protection mechanism for journalists.
Uh-huh.
And but she didn't get it properly, because it's you're supposed to have protection within 8 hours that you requested, and but it didn't happen. She only got a response in 12 hours, but it wasn't complete. They only told her, okay, you're in the protection mechanism, but not until 20 days after they gave her the all the options or all the instructions and all the information.
So she got some protection, but it was insufficient, really.
It was insufficient.
Okay, all right. Now, probably a final question. Is this common in Mexico, that there is this form of suppression of media freedom, of journalist freedom? Is that common in Mexico?
Yeah, she told that this happens all the time, that Mexico, her country, it's a very big country, and you have several experiences. For instance, you have different experiences when you are in the border with U.S., in the border with Guatemala. She talked about the border with at the north, with United States. You have a very strong censure.
Censorship,
yeah, because you have repression from part of the government and the crime organizations. And in the center of the country, it's more related to the economical support received by the government. So the media are following a very straight line, talking about...
Okay, so there's kind of, they get funding from the government, so they're careful about what they
say. Exactly. For instance, she knows some journalists that actually have to leave their state. For instance, Chihuahua, Sinaloa, they just go away to another part of Mexico for a couple of months, and then they go back when they are harassed or receiving this. Or they just go for good. They never come back.
Right.
So this is very common,
very common
in Mexico.
Great stuff. And thank you very much to Veronica Basurto Gamero for her time, and for Adan Vera, Mexican citizen in Dublin, for translating that. Okay, on to the final piece of the week, of the fortnight, I should say. And it's the Slovak Culture Week 2013. The director of the Slovak Centre Ireland, Mr. Rastislav Blazek, cordially invites you to attend the official opening ceremony of the Slovak Cultural Week. So there's lots to be had there. Now, to explain a little bit more about it, I'm joined on the line by Maros Karabinos. Good afternoon to you, Maros.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Busy day working.
Busy day. Good stuff. Now, the Slovak Culture Week, which kicks off this Friday evening in Dublin, can you tell us a little bit about it? What is it for? What's the importance of it, and what can people expect to see?
Well, guys, I'm very jealous of you, because you have an opportunity to see, to go to visit this beautiful event,
right,
which is lasting for 1 week from Friday till Friday. Basically, background is very
That's
simple.
That's from 7th to the 14th of June.
Yes. Background of Slovak Cultural Week in Dublin is very simple. There's a very active community in Ireland, Slovak community. It started all in 2004. We were getting organized, which was really coming to coming to a very successful establishment of Slovak Center in 2006-2007. Uh-huh. And since the very first moment, we were thinking about how to promote us as a people, okay, and the country, of course, which is Slovakia. And then the first year, we were sort of thinking what we're going to do. The second year, we said, we're going to do it, and on a very small budget, basically with €500 in our pocket.
Good stuff.
We organized the Slovak Cultural Week.
Good. So how did you manage to do it in such a small budget? Because that's a real lesson for people. People need to know how to do things in a small budget now.
Well, how to do things. First of all, you need to have excellent volunteers, people who are able to dedicate their personal time, their knowledge, their skills. We had a great support from Center for Creative Practices, which is still our venue for this event. And, of course, Dublin City Council was very supportive. And then we have, in Slovakia, we have a special government office which is taking care of Slovaks living abroad. Mm. And basically, they helped us as well. Mm. So, really, with €500 in the pocket and with great support from volunteers and private supporters and business supporters, because, for example, catering was provided by a well-known Czechoslovak restaurant in Dublin. That was the case, really. So, if I can say, spending was much, much, much bigger, okay, what we spent.
Yeah.
But really, in cash, we had only 500.
Great. So, of course, we know very well here at Near FM the importance of having really good volunteers behind you. And if you have good volunteers behind you, really anything's achievable. Now, as we know, as everybody knows, Slovakia joined the European Union in May 2004 and you joined the Euro in January 2009. From your perspective or from a Slovak perspective, how is European Union membership agreeing or not agreeing with Slovak people or membership of the Euro currency itself?
Well, as far as I know, it was as per last year's results, Slovakia and Slovak citizens are the most supportive of European membership. Like, you know what I mean? That they really, because the situation is that we are very practical people, so we understand all flaws which are coming from and problems coming from European Union membership. But we see a huge benefits and huge positive changes happening in Slovakia, which are connected directly to European Union membership. So that's the position of Slovakia, which is really public, and it was some research, I think. It was published last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, so overall, Slovakian people are very supportive of the European Union. And of using the euro currency, is there any nostalgia for the old currency?
Not at all. Not at all. Again, plenty of benefits. Like, we're shopping in Austria. There's plenty of people from Bratislava, from our capital, going to Austria for weekly shopping. We really appreciate, for example, holiday goers. They go to Croatia. They can use euro. No problem at all. So it's really handy. And don't get me wrong. Like, feeling of Europe, if you're living in the heart of Europe, okay, it's different as for Irish, okay? I do understand.
Yeah.
It's Ireland, geographically, it's really culturally, it's very different from a Central European culture, because if I can use the term, because our cuisine is overlapping with Hungarian, Poland, with Czech cuisine, you know, our traditional customs.
Yeah.
The same, you know.
Are you saying something? Are you saying something wrong with Irish cuisine?
I know a few pretty good restaurants, and they offer international vibes based on Irish food, you know, so it's really good in Dublin.
Oh, good stuff. Okay, Maris Rabianos, thank you very much for joining us. So the Slovak Culture Week starts this Friday in Dublin, the 7th of June at 6 p.m. at the Centre for Creative Practices. That's 15 Pembroke Street, Lower Dublin 2. Listen, thank you very much for
more information.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the more information on our website, really, slovakcentre.ie, and there's plenty more to read, so All listeners more than invited to check it out.
Fantastic, Maris. Slovakcentre.ie. You can get more information there. Thank you very much, Maris, for joining us.
Excellent. Have a nice evening. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. So that was all about the Slovak Culture Week that's coming up, starting this Friday, the 7th of June, and then running until the 14th of June. More information at slovakcentre.ie. And the evening is kicking off, the week is kicking off this Friday. So that's almost it from us for this fortnight, getting close to the end now. So thank you very much. It was quite a full show, as they say. Thank you very much to Jerry McGlinchey for talking to us about the release of his wife, Marion Price McGlinchey, to Caspar Clasper for talking about the most recent drone strikes in Pakistan, the first drone strike since the Pakistani election, the recent Pakistani election, to Zovinar Nazarian, who told us all about the military brutality in Armenia, and indeed the human rights group that she works with, Army in Reality Civic Initiative. You can get more information about that. Veronica Basurto Gamero, and as well Reporters Without Borders for that interview, and for Adam Vera from Mexico for doing the translation. And then recently you just heard there from Maris Karabinos, who told us all about the Slovak Culture Week. More information on that at slovakcentre.ie, kicking off this Friday and running for a week. So I think that's about it from us this fortnight. The Punk Show is up next. So for me, Peter Carney, until 2 weeks' time, take care.
Community radio for North East Dublin, 90.3
Near FM. Tune into The Punk Show.